Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Adventure Zone Zone, the premier podcast in which we talk about the podcast that we normally do on a different podcast within the podcast feed itself.
It's called Gaze Into Our Navel with us.
Yeah.
We want you to come to the very edge of our navels, our collective navels, and stare into us with them. Don't make us stare into our own navels alone.
Join us in our navels.
Climb, climb into our belly button world.
Look.
You can go all the way in there.
There's a little bit of lint in there.
We're going to be discussing the season we just wrapped up, Abnormals, talking about the next season. Ooh. And we have lots of great questions here. So let's dive right in. From Devin, were there other animals you considered choosing? If so, what were they? Bonus question for Travis, if you were to make a hero character, what animal would you choose and why?
Devin, did you listen to the season? Because Travis made about 40 hero characters.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'd play as any of that. I think if I was going to make a character, it would be like a golden retriever.
Yeah.
Kind of do like that was just really, ready to do anything, eager to please, happy to be anywhere doing anything. I like the idea of like a himbo, like a Mr. Peanut Butter kind of like himbo.
That's your vibe. I mean, that's the vibe.
Yeah, it's my vibe in general. Yeah.
I never considered another animal because I actually came into Abnormals with the concept of a spy cow already fully formed. I pitched a children's book called Bovine International Cow of Mystery.
Wow.
It was not surprisingly not picked up by a publisher, but
they were just too afraid. They were too afraid of how real. Yeah, it was too real.
Breaking the mold. So I already had the cow spy thing and the ridiculousness of him trying to be a master of disguise and a dancer and all that stuff. So I was on Roger right away.
So in a way, the character was also a funeral for this.
Yes,
other
absolutely.
Yeah. It's like a living memorial.
You can kiss that goodbye. But if a publisher wants to pick up The Adventures of Roger Moore, give me a call.
Navy SEAL was my first thought, best thought. Didn't come up with another one. Got it in one. I think I was the last one to make my character because I wanted a good gag. And this was, I think, soon after our Mabim Bam year where I dressed up as a sailor boy, and so I guess I had stolen valor on my brain, and that's where Navy SEAL came from.
I just know kids like axolotls.
Yeah,
that's
it's real big. They're big,
so I did that so that my kids would like me. I mean, like, period.
I feel like we all kind of had the same thing of like finding our thing and settling on it, because if this specific game and this specific world, I feel like if you look at the full breadth of what, the entirety of the ecosphere offers to you, like, it would be impossible to choose just one.
From Larry, speaking of Roger Moore's backstory of being an alien is awesome. What inspired that, and will we ever get more stuff about it?
Maybe I love that this is the question that you picked, Mac.
Yeah.
It's just random chance.
What cartoons were your biggest inspirations for the season? I think it's just all of us. Which do you think Abnormals ended up resembling the most? Thank you for the great podcast, Macworld family. I look forward to hearing your answers. Basically, Roger being an alien, Travis said there are three ways, the three origin points. Was it three, Trav, or four? Three origin points.
No, there
points.
Are three.
And
to be a mutate, to be evolved, or to be an alien.
Yeah. And Travis said, the other guys have kind of taken on mutate and evolved, so why don't you take aliens? And I said, yeah, great. So it was kind of a natural after that. And
we really didn't discuss the, the major sort of things that would bring to our characters, the fact that you were an alien. And that Justin, I think Axolotl used to be a human and then turned into an axolotl? Is that...
That is so interesting, Griffin. That has kind of gone back and forth. A bit of a moving target there, yeah.
You would think there's some context. Like, it would come up in conversation, like, by the way, my planet, Bovlax 9 or whatever.
Yeah, I think from what I remember, the canon I came up with is that if he was an axolotl before, he does not remember it, because as an axolotl, he wouldn't have formed memories in the sense that we do think of them. So axolotl only knows himself to be axolotl. Cool.
Love that.
But I think along those lines, to answer the second half of your question, Larry, so the cartoons, I mean, there's a long list of Abnormals cartoons that I pulled from. Cowboys of Moo Mesa, Biker Mice from Mars, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, of course. Even stuff like Gargoyles, Road Rovers. There's a lot, right? Yeah. And one of the things, there was, of course, you know, the inspiration of the Abnormal stuff. But also there was a lot of like, yeah, man, there's backstory and justification for things, but it's all very like surface level. Like, they don't get into the science of, like, they're street sharks. How do they breathe? Right? Like, it that's not as important as, like, we all need you to accept that these are half human, half sharks that, like, ride motorcycles and stuff and play, you know, street hockey or whatever. And if you can buy into that enough, we're golden. It's great. So, like, the backstories are pretty malleable within those shows as to, like, what's going on and why and how they got there. And, you know, it was less about strict factual adherence as much as it was like, yeah, that's fun for this episode. That's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Here's a question from Frankie. I'd love to know what writing and creating the theme song for this season was like, since it's so unique compared to other seasons. Juice, do you want to... I feel like you spearheaded the sort of coordination on this.
Yeah, I wrote it. I wrote it, is what you meant to say, Griffin.
You sort of were on the baseline.
Yeah, so I wanted to try it, and I came up with like sort of a very, very, very loose song idea, and then I went to Eric Neer, who has done a lot of the jingles for us for Backward Family Clubhouse, and Eric's also done the music for both the Charlie Verse episodes. And I was like, listen to this, we're kind of messing around with it, see what you think. And then Eric reworked the melody and some of the words, and then we were talking to Jonathan Colton about recording it, and he changed some of the lyrics and tweaked some of that, the music, and gave it a really cool sound. And so it was a very neat kind of collaboration. I thought it would be fun to try something, to try writing a song, or at least like the basis of one. And it was fun. And I think it came out pretty cool.
We had a question here. Let's see, from L. While some, Lamar, are somewhat self-explanatory, I was wondering where the inspiration of the names of the Greenback Guardians came from. I don't know why Lamar is self-explanatory, but basically, I took inspiration from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all being named after, I believe, Renaissance artists.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I like the idea of, like, a theme to that. So I went with, like, adventures instead of artists in a similar line. So Lamar was Hedy Lamar, who, along with being an actor, she also basically like developed Wi-Fi and GPS, and she developed frequency hopping technology. And then there's Ada Lovelace, who is like the creator of the idea of programming computers. There's Isaac Newton for Newton and George Washington Carver for Carver. Really, the trickiest thing was picking names that worked, one, as names, like singular, we're just going to call them this.
Right.
And like kind of sounded cool as well.
Carver. So I like such a good
Carver, Loveless, Lamar, Newton. And so like I was thinking about Curie in there.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't, it was too hard for me to say repeatedly and not ended up saying Curry a lot. Yeah.
That's a good point, actually. People don't think about that kind of stuff.
That honestly
separates us from the amateurs.
when I am naming NPCs, I will noodle on it so long. Especially for like major NPCs, say it out loud so many times to find one that I can say repeatedly and not sound dumb doing.
Yeah. As opposed to the early days when we like snatched Tom Baudet out of the ether.
Well, but even Tom Baudet, you could say over and over again. It's fun to say. It works.
Can we do this one from Margaret? Loved this season of Taz and have been loving the shorter form goofiness of recent seasons. I have two questions for y'all. One, for Travis, how far in advance did you have the big walrus reveal planned? And was it hard to keep it hidden from your players? Two, for Clint, Justin, and Griffin, who was your favorite abnormal NPC that you encountered? This could be from a pun appreciation standpoint or a narrative one. Travis, do you want to tackle that first? The first one,
right?
First?
So I told them right away, there is going to be a character called the Walrus, and there is going to be an NPC who is half walrus, half man, named Walter Russell, and it will be obvious to you as players that he is the Walrus. But it is important that your characters don't make that connection until it's revealed, because once again, this is kind of playing on a lot of like the Abnormals TV show tropes of having a person who's very obviously the bad guy to the audience. Like, I was thinking about I can't remember the character's name. I think it's Magnum or Magnus or something in Gargoyles, who is like so obviously bad, but he's the guy who like moves the castle there, and the gargoyles like live on top of his building for a while, and the gargoyles are like working with him while the audience is like, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, clearly.
He's the bad one.
This guy's the problem.
And
Magnus, get him.
Yeah, come on. And not like a cool Magnus like we've seen before. And so it was kind of a running joke amongst us that it was so obvious and the characters never put it together until he revealed it.
There was a fun point in the season, maybe like 10 episodes in or so, where I feel like I was kind of spinning my wheels trying to piece like some of the clues together that you had given us. And I think my brain was operating in a more, abstract sort of fashion. And once you like talk to us very frankly about the Walrus and Walter Russell, the pieces kind of fell into place of like, oh, this is as simple as, the villain arc in a, Saturday morning cartoon would be.
Exactly.
And I feel like we all really got on board after that. Favorite NPC?
Yeah. Mine was Eel Patrick Harris. Come on.
Dang it, you took mine. That's the best.
Are we just talking name or are we talking characterization?
In the question, it specified exactly that. So
okay.
We can do both.
Mine is from a narrative perspective. I love the sort of like cohesive tone of this world being that of a cartoon and therefore not having dire consequences or much violence to speak of whatsoever. And it is for that reason that I love Chlorophyllis, because anytime Chlorophyllis showed up, like the air in the room got sort of sucked out and it was like, oh my God, there's an actual dangerous killer here in this children's show. And I always found that very, very entertaining.
I don't know. I had a lot of fun with Hair Dryer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was great too.
That was fun to play. I liked a guy. I think maybe Hair Dryer came first, and then the name of the business, Dryeria, came second. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I love this guy very, very much. And I had a lot of fun playing him. Artie Fischl as well was really fun.
Artie was good. That was a good character too. Yeah.
Thank you.
From Neil, the end credit song of many action movies becomes culturally synonymous with the movie itself. Kiss from a Rose by Seal and Batman Forever. What I've Done by Linkin Park and Transformers, and Extreme Ways by Moby in the Jason Bourne movies comes to mind. If you were to pick a licensed rock ballad to play during the live-action Abnormals movie end credits, what would it be? For me, again, referring to Chlorophyllis, I would say U2's She Moves in Mysterious Ways.
That would be such a weird, wild, troubling pick for this show.
Probably Kesha's Animal.
That would be good.
Would be good. I'm not sure the lyrics of it, but yeah.
I would say a Fall Out Boy cover of Hungry Like the Wolf.
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, from Drew Davenport. Justin, were you prepared to evolve Axel if he ever encountered iodine? So, interesting question, Drew. There are people who have one of the things that's interesting about axolotls, and there's a lot, is that they don't metamorphize in the sense that we think of amphibians doing that. But you can make them. If you give them iodine, they will. That's weird. That's a weird thing that is true. And I thought about that at some point. I think that it's kind of a classic Taz stumbler, though, because you invest these sorts of like private research times in, and then you just like wait for the opportunity to use them to materialize. But if you don't communicate them with the other parties, it's rare that you are just going to organically encounter iodine, right? Like, it's rare that that just like pops up in the story. So it never became salient. If that makes sense.
Travis, were you trying to think of, like, how can I slip some iodine into this guy? Because I have to imagine that's got to be a tough sort of improv prompt.
Early days, yes. There was going to be a temptation, you know, of iodine where he could have. Because, like, Axel Isles, if I remember correctly, one of the reasons he wasn't more ingratiated in the amphibophores was because he didn't evolve into a final form like they all did.
Yeah.
And the idea of like having an iodine injection presented that he could choose to do to join them. But then that ended up feeling, I don't know, way too heavy.
Super heavy, dude.
And I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that. It seems like too much.
There was a question about your favorite fun fact about the animal archetype that you played. And I don't know if the iodine thing qualifies for you.
I worked in a lot of them. The limb thing is really good. I try to work in as many axolotl facts as I could, because I had a bookmark that I just recently deleted that was great axolotl facts for kids. 100 great axolotl facts for kids. And I had that tab open pretty much all the time we were recording.
I'll tell you what, man. Speaking of working things in, I always had in the back of my mind trying to find opportunities to chop Axel Lyle's limbs off, and it came up so infrequently. But I was trying to, I was trying to find opportunities to do it constantly.
Well, Trav, I think the tough thing is it's hard to create the stakes of limb removal, but then keep that specifically targeted to one,
just one character.
So yeah.
So like, if you unleashed like Limbor, the limb-hating man,
yes,
right, and it's like the one human in the world. It's Limbor, the limb-hating
Limbor
man.
Baby would have been it, but go on.
Limbor baby, the limb-hating man, and everyone's disgusted by him, right?
Yeah,
like, he's a human being. But if you put him in a room with some of the other turds, Dad probably would have like farted on him so hard that he cut Dad's legs off, and like Griffin would have been like stealing valor, and it turned out that he was in the reserves or something, and then he would chop Griffin's limbs off, and then he may not even get to my limbs.
Yeah, that would be
it. Also,
ironic.
Just didn't fit with the vibe of a lot of like Saturday morning cartoons. There's very rarely a time where Shredder like rips Donatello's arm off.
Well,
you know,
despite the name, right?
He shreds
so
nothing in the entire run.
And Lyle didn't really need anybody else. He chopped off his limbs more often than anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
By the way, that question about animal facts came from Sierra. Just wanted to
thank you, Sierra. Do you have a fun animal fact about cow must be a tough one, Dad, because I feel like cows are pretty mainstream as far as animals go.
I tell you what I had to stay away from was any reference to beef or steaks, or I mean, that just seemed to be a bit too much.
You're an alien, right? The thought of people eating your meat must be so insane.
And so... you know, everybody knows they got multiple stomachs, and maybe I leaned a little too heavy into the fart thing, do you guys think?
Or not enough. Well, it was interesting, Dad, because you leaned so, like, that was such a big mechanic you did, but your character was this, like, debonair, you know, like, spy cool dude who just also farted a lot.
Well, when you have is a hammer, your flatulence this season, Dad, was your farts were your Givago's projector this season.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
There was a lot of, but the good thing is you can fit a fart through a round hole, no matter what, And so
that's what that is one good. Can you say the sentence again?
You can fit a fart through a round hole very easily. You don't have to force it. One good thing. Yeah.
Maybe the only good thing.
I couldn't find a ton about Ross seals, or at least not before I did just the Zoo of Us, where I learned a lot about Ross seals. I think that the like crazy siren calls that they do is the most biggest standout thing.
That was fun.
But the the fact that they are so solitary and so territorial, I feel like influenced a lot of the, I don't know, character choices, certainly between Navy SEAL and Golden SEAL. So that was a bit more coded, I guess, and not as silly.
Hey, everybody, in case you've somehow missed it, Story and Song, the final graphic novel in our Adventure Zone Balance graphic novel series, comes out next week. You can pre-order it right now at theadventurezonecomic.com. If you pre-order from one of our indie bookstore partners, you'll get a book plate signed by one of us and Carrie. Book release event next week in Boston. Tickets are on sale now. It's going to be July 16th at 7 p.m. at the Chevalier Theater. Each ticket includes a signed paperback copy of Story and Song provided by Brookline Booksmith. And we have a special mid-month episode of Clubhouse on Tuesday, July 14th to celebrate the book coming out. And the regular monthly Clubhouse is still on the 21st, so check that out. We've got some new merch this month. There's a Trav Nation Centennial Magnet along with a bunch of other great stuff. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will also be donated to the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. So go check that out, macroymerch.com, and back to the show.
All right, we're over 70 episodes into our show. Let's learn everything. So let's do a quick progress check. Have we learned about quantum physics?
Yes, episode 59.
We haven't learned about the history of gossip yet, have we?
Yes, we have. Same episode, actually.
Have we talked to Tom Scott about his love of roller coasters?
Episode 64.
So how close are we to learning everything?
Bad news. We still haven't learned everything yet.
Oh, we're ruined!
No. It's good news as well. There is still a lot to learn.
Woo!
I'm Dr. Ella Hubber.
I'm regular Tom Lum.
I'm Caroline Roper, and on Let's Learn Everything, we learn about science and a bit of everything else too.
And although we haven't learned everything yet, I've got a pretty good feeling about this next episode.
Join us every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
If you want to know what's going on in the world of movies, you should be listening to Maximum Film so we can tell you all about it.
Okay, but what if you already know what's going on in the world of movies? What if you're kind of obsessed with movies, like maybe you have a problem?
Well, then you should definitely be listening to Maximum Film, because we too have that problem, and it's important you know you're not alone.
We're talking indies you'll want to seek out.
Blockbusters and blockbusting wannabes.
Classics we can't get enough of.
I'm comedian and writer Kevin Avery.
I'm film critic Alonzo Duraldi.
I'm festival programmer and producer Drea Clark.
Together, we're Maximum Film. Smart about movies in Hollywood, so you don't have to be.
But if you already are, that's also great. And hey, we see you.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
Liz the Wiz asks, for the players, how did using a custom system affect your ability to inhabit the characters in the world? And for me, how did using your own system affect preparation for each session compared to Urban Shadows or D&D? Liz also asks, are there any plans to release the system publicly? Yeah, we're going to put that out. It's very bare bones.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like, and this is going to be the one that sweeps the TTRPG nation. But it's a good starting point, I think, for if you want to build on it and stuff like that.
I feel like games come at this question in different ways. Like there are some games like Blades in the Dark, where the tone and the world and the setting are so ingrained in the game and its mechanics and like maps and all that stuff. And then there are games where, like, the aesthetic is pretty well-defined just by the genre, and so it kind of stays out of your way for the most part. And I felt that way about this game. Like, when we made our characters, Travis was like, come up with your own special moves. So, like, there's a lot of... I enjoyed that process a lot because it made me feel a lot of ownership over my character rather than, like... I'm trying to pick a power off of a list of powers and trying to make it fit in what the character was that I had envisioned.
That was my goal in the character creation aspect, was I wanted it to be play these characters the way you want to play them so that they feel very unique to you and to the, like, animal you've picked and the style you want to approach it with. And everything, instead of just being like, here's a rogue,
right?
Choose a rogue archetype that you want to do.
But we did still fill archetype. Like, I do think there is a temptation there that is hard to resist of, like, I'll be the tank. And Roger will be sort of the infiltrator. And Axelisle will be sort of the brawler. And I think that's just natural.
And I like the flexibility of the system, too. I mean, you could... Yeah. And the fact that you could fail and it would still benefit you in some ways with the different points you could build up and everything else.
I think it's also cool that it's sort of mixed for, like, team play. Like, combat is balanced, I think, for, like, to make sense in a group context. Like, it's not... It doesn't incentivize going off on your own and prioritizing your own individual goals, which feels in step with the sort of, like, you know, TV that it's in conversation with.
Yeah, as far as the using the system to, like, prepare for sessions and stuff, I think that, like, combat is a great example where I tried to look at it once again from the perspective of, like, the TV shows that we were basing it off of. So the idea of, like, you know, these four Ninja Turtles versus, like, 100-foot clan things, right? And it not being – the danger isn't, like, the damage that's going to be done to, you know, the Ninja Turtles so much as it is the sheer number that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
And so trying to balance things that way where there was a lot more, like – swarms of enemies are descending and you need to make it easier on yourself by figuring out, like, ways to use your abilities and the environment and stuff to try to disable them for a couple rounds so that you can find room to maneuver and breathe and everything.
There's a fun byproduct of, like, this model where you're not killing characters. There's not, like, a predetermined finish line for a fight, which is you killed all the guys. Instead, I feel like most combat scenarios we got into were while we were trying to accomplish something else. And I think that that is, like, I don't know, the optimal way to do combat in any role-playing game is to have it not just be a... Unless it's like, you know, you have your boss fights, your Walter Russells, if you will. But for the most part, like, I don't know, I enjoy when combat is just kind of a thing you have to do so you can do the thing that your mission objective or whatever.
Yeah. And once again, that's source material thing, you know, like the street sharks weren't like, let's just go out and kill a monster.
Yeah. Right.
It was, they were very much trying to stop something or, intervene in something else that was going on. It's why I really like, I think one of my favorite, like, encounter things was the, first time we met Artificial with, like, the robots smashing up.
That was my favorite
awards
too.
Gala. Mm-hmm. That was just a fun, like, environmental use of things and all the stuff going on in different rooms.
Well, and that the house sitting adventure was favorite of all of them, just because.
Oh, that was great.
The combat there was sort of preventative, like trying to stop the house from getting messy. And trying to clean up the house while the combat was still happening was a real highlight of the season for me. Here's one from Poppy. I had a blast listening to Abnormals and appreciated that it felt like a very tight narrative that explored each of the characters without losing the plot. Were there any story beats you wanted to explore but weren't able to for whatever reason? And if at liberty to say, what were they? Looking forward to the next series on the horizon. For what it's worth, I feel like I got everything I kind of wanted. Like, once we sort of found that a lot of Navy stuff was about his family, I don't know. I feel like I got good. I was very satisfied by the kind of closure of that situation with the standoff in the tower. I'm not sure there was much meat left on the bones that I wanted to get to.
I would have liked to spend more time with Nicole Squidman and Navy SEAL's burgeoning relationship.
I always get so uncomfortable about about in-game relationships. I don't know that that's a thing I'll ever sort
obvious
of
reasons.
Pursue.
Obvious reasons.
Yeah, fair.
From the GM side, I guess I do have a history of being comfortable with it. On the player side, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Telling. I think I would have liked to spend more time with like Roger Moore and the All-Stars and like sports related stuff. Once again, it just didn't really come up all that often, but the idea of like Roger Moore was from, you know, a planet of like all sports stars and that kind of being their main focus, and his thing was like competitive ballroom dancing.
So wait, he didn't come
kind of
from
a black sheep because of that.
You didn't come from a cow planet. You came from a planet of sports.
Oh yeah.
Well, it was all barnyard. It was the barnyard all stars. So it was a planet of all barnyard sports.
Barnyard
aficionado.
Yeah, I didn't put that together. That's great. Yeah, I wanted to go. I want to go to Sports Planet 2, season 2, Sports Planet.
We didn't get off planet. I think that's something I would have liked to do. And then there were like the dragon riders who were dragon abnormals who rode dragons. That's cool. We didn't get time to explore that kind of stuff.
In the I think hat there was on just a hat file.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing, right? Of like, I had ideas for all these other abnormals teams that you guys would like encounter and occasionally like go toe to toe with. And that kind of thing just ended up feeling too crammed in.
Yeah.
And, like I found myself trying to manufacture like, and then you have a run in with these people.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, then I'm kind of forcing them into that.
I really thought your restraint this season was really on point, Trav, and not sort of like overloading us. And what I really liked about it is that you would have some moments where you had to kind of rip the valve off and let some steam out. And then we would get 9 characters named after celebrities with fish-based puns snuck into their names. And yeah, I saw those and I was like, that's a lot of fish-based celebrity puns, but I know that he has to get this out of his system. That it has to come out somehow or else he'll die.
Better out than in,
he'll burst.
Yeah.
And then
we started
doing our own puns too for catchphrases. And I still had a couple I didn't get to use, like "Do you veal like I veal?"
But so Dad, you say a catchphrase, but that's not a catch, like I can't see that.
You don't know
being
what's going to catch on, bud. You know,
that's fair. Yeah. Do you veal like that's I fair. Veal? Along those lines, there's a question here. Let's see. From Mitch. We know you had an entire list of celebrity abnormal names you didn't get around to using. Let's hear them. My brain doesn't work. I didn't have a bunch prepared so much as I think I could come up with them easily on the spot. Like Lion Reynolds, Ryan Gosling was
that
one.
That one you don't even
to
have
use.
To change. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to use that one. I got to use Mark Buffalo. And talk about him, I think, at the sports gala, which I enjoyed. One of my favorites, now I'm blanking on his name. Who's the guy who did West Wing?
Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin actually came, that was from Paul Foxcroft, who voiced Krillium in the like phone call voice messages and stuff. And I had him help me punch up that intro thing. And he came up with Aaron Sorkin sponsoring the West Wing of the museum.
That's cool.
And it's a great joke. It's one of my favorite jokes in the thing because it's just like a weird little flavor thing. And I also
Dr.
like
Snyder Arden Fields, a.k.a.
Thank you.
Snarf.
Yeah. That was a tough one because incorporating an abnormal cat when so many abnormal cats exist.
Right.
Right.
And I was trying to be very choosy, so I decided to go with the Thundercat that was least abnormal-like, and went with Snarf. And plus, I like doing Snarf voice, so that was fun as well.
Good. I'm glad you could get that out of your system.
Thank you. Duck also asked to address this. How does it feel once again at DM a season where you have to come up with clever episode titles? Our editor, Rachel, was in charge of that, and I was merely there refining them and helping with them. But I think that those clever titles, Rachel absolutely knocked it out of the park and did an amazing job.
Incredible
with that
work.
And with the editing, the sound design, everything. It was really fun this season.
Let's get to what people really want to hear about, which is the cussing. Can we get into can we crack open the data? We had some questions, a lot of questions about the profanity. Mel said, so let's be real. How often did y'all get unfamily friendly, a.k.a. how hard did you make Rachel work? And I don't know who pulled this data, but it is exhaustive.
I believe it was Rachel.
Rachel and Amanda, I would bet.
There were 65 total censored swears throughout the season, which I don't think is that bad.
Like 28 episodes?
Yeah. And that the results are surprising to me, knowing the breakdown on Mabim Bam. Trav, do you want to read?
Justin had the most at 22. I have the second.
Okay, that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
Did you think I'd have a defense? I don't have a defense.
No, yet. I think that there was a lot about Axel Lyle that would have made him a prime cusser in a different show.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that's for sure, Trav. And the other thing is, I cuss in front of my kids all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a setting for... I don't have a kid setting. I should. I don't have one. I should have pretended I was doing Sawbones, but I would have asked you guys too many questions about blood.
Yeah.
That's fair. And I thought, anything. Justin, you did a really good job keeping the questions about blood to a minimum.
Thank you, Travis. This season. I got a lot of feedback.
I had 20 curses, which I think what I found surprising was apparently my descriptions and like emotional states of people tended to curse. Not like in character, but rather like I'd be describing how upset someone was. And I would just default to a curse word.
Yeah.
Or how messed up a room was when you walked in. And I would curse in there. And I'm like, darn it.
The takeaway here is I had 18. The least of the brothers, which is at the inverse ratio of Mabim Bam, because I try not to cuss in front of my kids. Dad only cussed four times.
Four times.
Because he's a Boy Scout. Dad. Well, okay.
Well, now
we do need to get that one, so that's up to five now.
Speaking of, while recording, Griffin caught and called out 28 of those curses. I caught 12. Justin caught 8. Dad caught none. And
I love that.
He doesn't neither a user nor a noticer be. Or
judge thee and judge not. And be not judged.
We missed 17. In the process that Rachel, Sarah, and Amanda had to catch.
Yeah.
And
how many did they miss?
Good question.
They didn't include that in their stats, did they?
Episode 1 had the most swears with 11. Next was episode 2 with 6. And then we got better after that.
We grew.
Yeah.
Four episodes out of 28 had zero swears. 12, 16, 21, and 22.
Now, there's also some data here for who said baby the most times.
Okay, now tell them, I didn't know we had a baby jar.
Yeah, this was, you sort of made the baby jar a thing because in episode 0, you kept saying baby, like a lot, like, yeah, baby.
You had 4 babies throughout the whole season. 3 of them were in episode 0.
Which is where the baby jar came up with.
Okay.
I found it so repugnant, and yet somehow I had the most babies throughout the season.
13.
There are 35 total babies. I had 13. Travis had 12. 6 from Justin and 4 from Dad. So I do want to apologize. That's not an energy that I feel comfortable sitting in. So the fact that I created it is, a reason for deep reflection.
Very shameful. Yeah.
Max asks, have your kids been listening to this season?
Yes,
my girls love my girls love the theme song so much, and they will ask me out of nowhere to pull up the like video we did with like the character artwork and stuff over and over again. And they don't really listen to podcasts in general, but they have asked me about every episode, what happens in it. And I've like shown them the prep for it and everything. And when I was telling BB about the like fight in Walter Russell's office, she started telling me things that I should do with like the water rising.
That's so great.
And the aquarium and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't planning on doing that. She's like, why not do the thing I'm saying?
The Charlieverse episodes have really turned our kids into auteurs.
Yes.
And I wish it would stop. Daddy's working. This is serious. No, that's not true. My kids don't listen to my things. The only content of mine that they enjoy is the intro to the McElroy Family Clubhouse that I had absolutely nothing to do with. So,
same.
That's it for me.
Juice, what about Charlie and Cooper?
They are not fans of mine, broadly speaking. No, honestly, they only like Greeking Out, which is a podcast about Greek mythology. And anytime I would say, do you want to listen to my podcast? They would ask if we had listened to all of Greeking Out yet. And I would say, no, we had not. And then we started new Greeking Out. So right. That is how it's been at my house. That's my
deal. And I would like to amend my answer when I said, yes, have your kids been listening this season? I think they have, but it was only in that 1 hour before we were getting ready to record the next episode. I think that's when
at 2x speed. Yeah.
You can't get high on your own supply, man. I can't be entertained by us. I'll lose sight.
That was from Max, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Say that. This was from Lex. Now that you have done a few more silly-leaning, lighthearted seasons, do you think you'll ever give larger, more dramatic narratives another go? I personally think you do an amazing job of either. They each shine in their own specific ways.
I will say, to kind of pre-answer that question, I think one of the things that, as we've discussed, you know, like post-mortem and stuff after seasons and everything, one of the things we found is correct me if I'm wrong, but what we find we like doing best and what works best is to start the season not with the intention of, like, telling, you know, these like dramatic narratives and stuff, and if they develop, they develop.
Yeah,
if it happens, it happens. But like, if we set out to do it, it will often feel kind of manufactured. And so I think maybe Abnormals, well, definitely Abnormals, and like Taz Versus maybe weren't as conducive an environment for those.
Yeah.
But I don't think we said, like, and there won't be any, no dramatic narrative.
No, but I would rather do a season where we have, a lot of fun. Record. It is a lot of fun to record this show knowing that you don't, like, it is not the goal to tie together some, like, grand narrative. It is easier to run a season like that. And I feel like it's more organic. Like that's kind of how balance went. And I think that is sort of where our heads are at now.
There's one I wanted to talk about real quick.
Sure.
From Jacob. Is there any aspect of the Abnormals theme you wish you could have done more with? We had talked early on about, like, kind of a toxic Avenger kind of thing where there would be like a character made of ooze that had been like a former member of the, like, three, you know, the Axel, Io, Roger, and Navy's team, that, like, he had left to get a real job because it wasn't taking off and wasn't doing anything. And not having, I think if we had continued or if the opportunity had arisen, having like kind of gross out mutant characters would have been fun. As like another hallmark of like 90s and early 2000s, your Garbage Pail Kids, your Creepy Crawlies, your that kind of thing, Toxic Avengers. I think that would have been fun to play with that we didn't get to do.
You keep lumping Toxic Avenger in there with the other stuff, and I don't know that Toxic Avenger.
Well, there was an animated Toxic Avenger.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Toxic Crusader?
Toxic Crusader. That was it.
The Toxic Avengers, the movie. I think Toxic Crusader was the, because it's like sounds better
for
kids to have a Crusader rather than an Avenger.
The Toxic Crusader. Yes. Because the Toxic Avenger was a much different property. But
I feel like there is a theme that's kind of in the questions and answers that's worth mentioning. Like, when we talk about things that we, like, quote, wish we had gotten to or whatever, It's worth noting that, like, that is the game for a lot of this. It is how much you prepare. Because if you, like, the discarding a lot of the stuff you prepare is just kind of par for the course.
Right.
Because if you only prepare the stuff that you get to, then what you're doing is, like, railroading yourself and trying to steer moments into the stuff you prepared.
Yeah.
But if you don't have stuff for any of it, then, you know, you're kind of working without a net. So it's really always kind of a balance of how much stuff do you have on hand, you know, thinking about I when I was DMing, I thought a lot about the backpack full of little toys and crayons and notebooks that I take for my kids on vacation. Like when we're just like stuck in airports or whatever, I have this bag that's like snacks and wipes. And, you know, I might not need everything, but I have all of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the process.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's really like another version of this question would be like, what do you wish your players had been interested in that you threw out at different points? And like, I don't know, man. Like, I was just trying to say, like, and here's a character, and here's a character. And if they'd been like, I want to hang out with that guy, it would have been a different scene or a different storyline.
But that happened, like, a lot.
Yeah.
We.
I mean, from the beginning, the first episode, I think, when you guys were on the bus, and you're like, what other people are here? And I was like, there's a koala man named Dean, and then that became a thing. Like, the way you guys reacted to Chlorophyllis is a great example of, like, yeah, I wanted her to be kind of, like, a blown-out poison ivy of, like, not only does she care more about plants than humanity, she's a psychopath when it comes to that kind of thing. And if you guys have been like, we want to party with her, okay, cool. That would have gone differently. You know what I mean? So
I definitely did not want to party with her.
No, definitely not.
Too scary.
So I don't know that there were, like, Joshua Darnett could have been kind of a Casey Jones-esque character, but ended up being a bit of, like, a doofus. And so that went a different direction. You know, stuff like
it
that.
It is also hard, I think, when the characters have such goofy names, it's really hard to lend them a lot of interiority. I mean, there's nothing about the name Goshwood, whatever it was.
Goshwood Darnett.
Goshwood Darnett that makes me think, like, I bet there's a rich tapestry here. I want to dig through.
See, well, I got the sense that there was a rich tapestry, and we were willfully choosing not to explore it, which I
and that's fine.
Liked a lot.
That was actually, I chose that name, this is no joke, as a tribute to Dad's Darn Tootin' from Dust Season 2 that he didn't get to use. I went with Gosh Darn It for a character.
God, Trav, I didn't even put that together until you just said that right now.
As a nod to when Dad didn't get to use Darn Tootin'
wonderful
for Dust, that I was like, well, here's Gosh Darn It as a tribute to Darn Tootin'.
Let's talk about the next season of The Adventure Zone, if we may. So for the next season, I'm going to be running it. We're going to be playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Both of them?
Both of them this time, the fifth edition of it. You know, a lot of the feedback that we get on our D&D seasons and a big problem that people run into when they play D&D, you know, with their friends is that there's maybe like one wizard or two wizards.
Yeah.
And it's like,
but there's no way of fixing that, Griffin. Unfortunately, it's one of the great unsolved problems of
Perfect
game.
What could you even do?
Well, my bold vision is this. What if there were 64 wizards?
Okay.
And what if those wizards were competing in a sort of battle royale style, high stakes death game for the ultimate magical power in the world?
This is feeling less and less hypothetical.
No, it is feeling quite material because we've already recorded an episode of it. It's called Taz Royale, and it's going to debut on June 5th. And it is a battle royale inspired season. More in the Squid Game style than the all-out deathmatch battle royale.
Winner take all
series of trials with survivors and not survivors. And which one will our heroes be? I don't know. They're wizards, and so are the other characters. There's lots and lots of... It's filthy with wizards this season.
Filthy with... You'll be spoiled for wizards.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. And... one thing we are going to, for this season, we are going to switch back to a bi-weekly schedule. And there's a lot of reasons for that. A big one is just that Abnormals, we kind of felt pretty rushed, both on the production side and the scheduling side.
I want to speak on that real quick because, like, episodes were shorter in Abnormals. One, because attention span for kids was kind of part of the goal. But also, like, prep time, doing that sound design stuff, doing the post-production, doing all of that. Like, we didn't maybe get to spend as much time on it as we would have liked.
I made no music for the entire season. Which, you know, there's still some incredible sound work done by Rachel in there, but
and a great theme song
and an amazing theme song. Justin and Eric and Jonathan really took it to the hoop on that one. But that's like a part of the show that I really enjoy doing, and doing it every week. There is just not any time for it. And also, we also got some feedback that, like, some folks had a hard time keeping up with, you know, a weekly release schedule for a narrative podcast like this. So there's a lot of reasons why we're going to jump back to biweekly so that we can, spend a little bit more time on this season, Taz Royale.
And somewhat longer episodes.
Yes, the episodes will be a bit longer. So that's the next season. June 5th is when it starts. And we hope you'll join us.
And September 14th is when it stops, and we can't tell you why, but I just decided.
Oh, that's wild. No, I hope not. That's a pretty short season.
For me, that's an actual long season.
Yeah. So. But yeah, that's what's next.
Thanks for listening to it. And if you're a kid or you let your kid listen, thanks for the trust.
Yeah.
We appreciate
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. That's this next season is not going to be kid focused.
Not gonna be family friendly.
If you could,
there will be 65 swears in the first episode.
Wow.
Well, and also, if all things go according to plan, 63 character deaths, which is significantly more than Taz Abnormals. So,
but I will say, as a final thing along those lines, that the family friendly kind of theme for Abnormals was inspired by how many. Like while we were doing meet and greets and convention appearances and stuff, how many like families came up of kids, you know, with kids that said that they listened with their parents, and, you know, 12-year-olds and stuff who their parents had shared the show with them. And that's just wonderful. It feels really good when, you know, you find out that kids have gotten inspired to get into role-playing games and get into this kind of stuff because of the stuff we do. So to the parents who have shared that with their kids and felt, you know, the trust in us to share stuff with their kids. It means a lot.
It really does.
And mm-hmm. we really appreciate it.
I would not make any promises to this effect, but I do feel like this season, Taz Abnormals, has moved me a little bit closer to the light of Christ in terms of not necessarily weaving a tapestry of profanity every other sentence. And so hopefully it will be... It's fun to listen to with some kids, but it's not explicitly made for them as Taz Abnormals was. So
and prove that we can do it.
Well, except for the 65 times that we blew it. And
yeah, but think of how many words we say in the course of a 28 episode.
That's true, Dad.
And I think about the curse words we didn't say. We've saved them all up for right now.
Yep.
Here we go.
Poo.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, and thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
And stick around for the next season. And we hope you enjoyed all the live shows that were saved up. Those were a lot of fun. We have more live shows coming up. So we've put out the Taz versus Robin Hood and Taz versus Hamlet that were two Taz versus live shows. And if you enjoyed those, you can come see them live. Coming up, all the tour dates and information is at bit.ly/ McElroy tours. All those tickets are on sale now. Go get yours, as well as the My Brother and Me shows, everything like that. So make sure you check those out.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.